The following is a public service announcement from the Museum of Food and Drink. Dave Arnold and Patrick Martins have gathered a team of New York's most innovative chefs and bartenders to create a 9-course fundraiser lunch at Del Posto, Sunday, March 27th. Their intent? To kickstart the greatest food museum in the world. The menu for this unprecedented event is derived from educational themes of the museum. Chefs will draw inspiration from sources outside their normal sphere. How will a cutting-edge chef handle the Paleolithic, or a dish only using pre-Columbian ingredients? What will a modern Italian chef do with ancient Rome? The chefs include David Chang of Momofuku, Wiley Dufresne of WD-50, Mark Ladner of Del Posto, Nils Noren of the French Culinary Institute, Cesare Casella of Salumeria Rossi, Carlo Maracci of Roberta's, Brooks Headley of Del Posto, and Christina Tozzi of Momofuku Milk Bar. Bartenders include Audrey Sanders of Pegu Club, Thomas Waugh of Death & Company, Simon Ford of Pernod Ricard, Damon Bolte of Prime Meats, and Eben Clem of BR Guest Restaurants. Proceeds from the event will directly support the Museum of Food and Drink. Tickets are very limited and $250 per person. To purchase tickets, please visit mofad.eventbrite.com. That's mofad.eventbrite.com. Once again, mofad.eventbrite.com. Sponsored by Pernod Ricard, Heritage Foods USA, Pat LaFrieda Meats, Barterhouse Wines, Del Posto Restaurant.
Hello there, Greenhorns. This is Severin. I'm your host this week for yet another episode of our favorite show, Greenhorns Radio, radio for young farmers, by young farmers, and we are, as usual, busy with many things and excited about most of them. And I just wanted to make a little moment before I introduce our guest today to tell you about some of the upcoming exciting things. Particularly, it being March, it's important to remind all the radio listeners about the upcoming Farms rally in Albany on the 30th of March. That's the No Farms, No Food rally organized by the American Farmland Trust. If you happen to be listening in the city of New York, there are free buses leaving New York City, traveling up to Albany to bring you there in person to become a part of the conversation and presence while you're a stakeholder for New York State agriculture and why farmland preservation and service to the farming community is of really critical importance. I really like to urge you to come to that if you are at all able. It is on a Wednesday. Other things upcoming to know about in the Southeast region, we'll be doing screenings in Charlottesville and in Washington, D.C., North Carolina, South Carolina, Bar Harbor, Maine, Portland, Maine, Concord, New Hampshire, Lee, New Hampshire, Poultney, Vermont, Shelburne, Vermont. That's all in the month of April, plus other ones that I didn't mention. So if you're interested to watch the movie that we've made, get up on the Greenhorns website and check out the events page. And if there's a screening near you, go check it out. If there isn't a screening near you, well, you're going to have to make it happen and organize a screening. This is a participatory outreach campaign, and we would love your guidance and assistance in setting up a screening in a town near you. So, having thus spieled my way into too much time, I would like to welcome Matthew Jones from Indianapolis, Indiana. How's it going?
Fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I can see the ground already. There's no more snow in some parts. What's the story with your spring?
Right now it's a little rainy, but no snow, and you know we're getting geared up to start planting things outside.
So Matthew, you're an urban farmer in a state that I've been reading about. A lot of people in Indiana getting jazzed up on organic agriculture. Seems like there's some kind of wave of goodness happening out there. Will you tell me what's going on in your scene?
Yeah. Well, here in Indianapolis, you know, there's a lot of, I would say over the last year or two, there's been a lot of interest in urban agriculture and just, you know, general food growing efforts, whether they're, you know, increased backyard gardening efforts or community gardens or, you know, sort of for-profit urban farming ventures. And then there are a lot of, you know, historically commodity farms that are, you know, getting into, that are taking an interest in smaller scale organic agriculture, which is really fun to see. On both fronts, sort of newer generations of people starting to explore what food and farming can look like.
And what's the market scene? What's the demand like in your city? Or actually, let's even start with what goes on in Indianapolis. What's your what's the history of industry in that city, and what do people do there to earn them the money to buy the food?
Let's see. I would say that there are a couple, more dominant industries that exist or have existed in Indianapolis. There used to be a fairly large manufacturing workforce. There's also several universities, and there's a big drug company, Eli Lilly, that's here. And so there's a pretty interesting mix of, skilled crafts folks, as far as machinists or fabricators, that sort of thing, as well as highly educated people who a lot of folks have moved here, for jobs related to education or policy or computer or drug development, sort of thing. So that's the that's sort of the population base, and I would say that a lot of folks, there's just been in general there's been a really big increase in folks' interest in buying fresh food, local food. People getting really excited about the possibilities of that sort of increased personal interaction with farmers and food makers, food processors, and all that stuff. So at the moment, it's probably geared a little bit more towards affluent customers. It's still it's a relatively new industry, local food here in Indianapolis. So it's sort of driven by, who can pay, who can afford to buy fresh food. But there's a lot of programs going on, that are trying to explore how to make food and fresh produce more accessible to previously underserved populations.
Wow, that was a really great overview. I wish that we would all. That was very considered and well described. Let's talk about why you want to live there, and how livable of a city it is, and the urban farming niche that you carved out for yourself in Indianapolis.
Okay. Well, I'm from Indianapolis originally. And I moved back maybe 5 years ago, and I have a son who is here in Indianapolis, so I'm pretty committed to Indianapolis through him for a while. But I love, I spent time in other cities that are, have, more established sustainability efforts going on, as far as whether it's food production or urban planning or that sort of thing. And what I like about Indianapolis is that there's it's still at that sort of infancy stage where there's not a lot of there's a lot of interest in, in this case we'll talk, with local food, there's a lot of interest in local food. There's not a lot of established institutional support for that. But there's interest in creating that institutional support. And so for me, I've really been able to you know, see these efforts be created from the ground up. So you get to see, you know, the level of impact is much greater than what it might be in cities like Portland or Seattle or New York or you know, cities that have successful food-related businesses and organizations already in existence.
This is one of the great thrills of going into a new food system ninja mode and pioneer mode. Is it is actually a privilege to establish and get going all the different parts of a local food system, starting with that awesome coffee and the awesome bread, local meat, local eggs, everything that has to happen, farm to school, chef collaborations, artist collaborations, all the equations, all of the parts of the equation that lead up to a vibrant, relocalized food economy. Well, getting to do the designing of that instead of only getting to plug away at the bottom is actually a privilege, as you say.
Yeah. And yeah, it's, I think with that ends up, there's just a lot more excitement because it's a newer thing, because, you know, these aren't things that have been going on for 10 years. So this is still a new idea and has, you know, because it's so new, really has a, you know, tremendous potential for both folks that are, you know, pushing these efforts, as well as folks who are, you know, on the receiving end of these efforts, you know, possible customers or potential collaborators or just folks that, you know, get to implicitly enjoy all these things going on around them. There's still this excitement about it, which is wonderful to see. It's a treat.
So you left, like many people, you left where you were from and you went to school and you had some adventures and you learned some skills along the way, and then you came back. Maybe you could just briefly summarize where you went and what you learned, and then when you came back, what it was that you discovered you wanted to do there. And mm-hmm. just briefly, because we don't have very much time, but just skim it over.
Okay, yep. So I went to school in Connecticut for a year, and was planning on studying American Studies there, and ended up leaving there after a year working on a farm in Massachusetts for about 6 months. And
did you say that you dropped out of college?
I did.
Oh, wow, that's a big deal. Was it a good decision?
It was a great decision. I'm currently, like, in the process of re-enrolling in school, but I would not have taken back, I wouldn't have changed anything as far as leaving school at the time that I did.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt. There's a lot of dropping out that happens in the farming world. So I had to make note of that. So you dropped out to farm, and then you were farming in Massachusetts. That's where you were at in the story.
Then farming in Massachusetts, and then moved out to Portland, Oregon for about a year, and was working in a bakery out there. And over this time, sort of realized that I very much enjoy working with food and being involved in that process and that sort of exchange that happens. And left Portland, moved back to Massachusetts to work on a farm, the same farm, actually, but focusing on vegetable production. And then after that, about 8 months there, moved back to Indianapolis. That was about, 5 years ago. And eventually got involved with local food efforts here through the County Extension Service through Purdue University. And worked for about a year and a half doing community garden maintenance and support. And after that time, started Big City Farms, which is a for-profit farm based in Indianapolis. And that's the brief overview.
So a lot of classic moves here, I'm hearing, is going to school, wanting to farm, moving to a cool city, doing a food industry type business, mm-hmm. understanding lifelong commitment to something, and then going back where your home is and making it happen mm-hmm. there.
Yeah, well, and I think that, I mean, for me, I mean, there are a lot of reasons why I'm here in Indianapolis, but in general, I think that it's very exciting and inspiring for folks to be able to, do work that they're excited about in their hometown. You know, they, because they, have that history with that place and the people there, because they have, presumably more intimate knowledge about, the workings of that environment and that city or town's needs. I think that projects that arise in that way are well attuned to the needs of that population, to the needs of that.
Right on. So now you're there and you're running big city farms.
Mm-hmm.
Let's hear it. What's the pitch? Why is it necessary? And what's the business? What's the business argument?
Okay. Let's see. So it's based around the land we use is all privately owned vacant land that's in downtown Indianapolis. So these are the bulk of the land we use is empty lots, residential lots that are owned. The people that own them, have plans in the future to build upon them or sell them or whatever. But for the time being, they're sitting vacant. And so, my original intention was that, here's all this property, here's all this land that has tremendous potential that's not being realized, and here's a really good way to, do something that both it makes me money, so it, answers that issue, and then it also allows me to grow food for Indianapolis residents. So it answers, that point or whatever. And it's just an interesting, it just creates new businesses, new potential interactions with existing businesses and community members. And it's been really exciting. It's been, I would say it's been a pretty successful business. We grow as much as we can for as long as we can on these lots. So our season's pretty long.
And you get to chit-chat with people walking by. Now that's a cool part.
Exactly. And that's something that, I've lived in rural areas. I think they're wonderful and lovely, but they're not for me. I very much, I couldn't be someone who, starts a farm in the middle of nowhere. Like, I very much enjoy social interactions, and for me, I love growing food, but, growing vegetables, but I also, even more so, like that, the potential for social interaction that food presents. So, in my opinion, I feel like I get more of that interaction within an urban environment.
And what do people say to you when they stop on their bike or on their walk across town? What do people really enjoy about the garden spaces that you're creating?
Yeah, I think folks that it's a whole range of feedback that I get. A lot of folks are amused and a little bemused by the existence of these, just to see in the midst of houses or commercial buildings, just some vacant lot that's filled with all different kinds of vegetables. And then there are a lot of folks that, particularly older neighbors that, will love to stop by and love to just watch the gardens grow just because they, fondly remember gardens of their youth, whether that was in a city or in the country. And one neighbor in particular remembers one lot that we use was a garden that his family had growing up, and so a lot of time had passed, but he remembers being a kid and having to fill up the garden beds before going out and playing, and he loves the fact that that lot has returned to one of its original uses.
It's really nice to have an old-timer perspective around. It's one thing about starting out on a new project all by yourself is sometimes it seems like really big, but having that context of what used to be and how much has transpired, even in the short history of our country here, I find that is a good perspective, and that the people who settled the land, they had to take away all the trees, and they had to pull out the oxes. They had to pull out the stumps using oxen and dynamite, and they had to hand hew all the lumber for these barns that they built. And the challenges that we face as young farmers are significant, but it could be worse. At least we have the internet these days.
Right. Exactly.
Do you use the internet in your business?
Barely. We have a website, which we do fairly passive promotion about our business from, and we use it to just as a means of communication with customers. I'm certainly not averse or against the idea of using the internet, but I would say over the last few years, I realized that, at this point, we have a fairly successful business going, and farm, and we're able to sell all the produce we grow. So we don't end up doing a ton of marketing, whether that's through more traditional means or through the internet. But yeah, it's a great resource.
The last question I had was, could you mind summarizing some of the really key institutional support programs that exist in Indiana and, awesome restaurants or culture makers that if people who are bothering me on the email about what's going on in Indiana and I'm interested to go back to my family's farm in Indiana and interested to know what's going on in Indianapolis, would you just give your little handful of recommendations of where to start that learning process?
Yeah. So there, as far as restaurants go, there are increasing number of them that are focusing on local foods. A few of them include Our Bistro, Recess, Goose the Market, H2O Sushi, and I'm sure there are others that I'm leaving out. And as far as organizations, there's a fairly well-established community greening program called Keep Indianapolis Beautiful, which does primarily landscaping and tree planting, but they have a fair amount of overlap with food growing efforts and gardening stuff. And then there are a couple organizations that are getting into food efforts, including there are a couple of healthcare providers and hospital systems. IU Health and Wishart Hospital are realizing that access to fresh and healthy food is critical to our health as individuals and health as a community.
So that was a good little list to start with of resources in Indiana. And if you want to talk more, shop, probably you can find Matthew at one of his farm locations in downtown Indianapolis. Any final words from you from over there?
No, it's just there are a lot of I'm grateful that for the chance to talk about Indianapolis and the efforts that are going on. I think it's exciting to see not just in Indianapolis but in other smaller cities these sorts of activities and efforts being undertaken. The potential that is contained within all of them is just exciting and inspiring to see.
So as I have a new sticker that I it says, "Don't be a bartender, be a mayor." We don't all have to fight to be in the coolest cities. There's plenty of room for plenty of ambition if you just downscale the size of the pond you're in. Sometimes it can be even more fun. So,
yeah.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you to everybody over there. Thank you, Heritage Radio, and talk to you next week.